Maine, Maine, Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing, hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, Jim Thorne.
Good evening and welcome back to the Maine Outdoors. Glad to have you along. Maine's longest running hunting and fishing and outdoor show dedicated to everything in the outdoors and dedicated to you, the listener. If you're listening to us tonight, you're listening on WVOM FM 103.9 Bangor, 101.3 FM Augusta, or 95.1 FM Rockland. And if you have a question for us or you'd like to call in with anything relating to hunting, fishing, or the great Maine outdoors, give us a call, 1-800-966-1039, 1-800-966-1039. And we are also on WVOMFM.com, and there you'll find our podcasts. Albeit that they're a little bit behind, but the ones that are on there are still good listening, and we hope to get that caught up pretty soon. Well, let's go around spacious Studio 7A here in Blueberry Broadcasting. On the other side of the bulletproof glass, I see Norm Plord is large and in charge. Hi, Norm.
Good evening. How you doing, Jim?
I'm doing pretty good. I heard my first red-winged blackbird yesterday up here, and I just heard one outside the studio again tonight. So
I haven't heard or seen one yet.
And we had geese fly over.
Good fly over geese.
While Jim and I were out in the parking lot chatting. So those are all great signs. So
there you are.
Speaking of Jim, he's somehow tucked in behind the concave back there. Hi, Jim.
Hi there, in the corner.
How's everything with blistered fingers?
Oh, everything is going to be fine. The blistered fingers coming up in June.
June?
Yeah, I hope everybody can make it to the Blistered Fingers Bluegrass Festival.
You got new strings on your banjo?
Well, I don't have them on, but I have them.
Well, that's good to know.
Yep.
And also in our studio tonight, we are pleased to have our guests with the Nature Conservancy, Hadley Corot and Josh Reut. Hi, Josh. Hi, Hadley.
Hey, hello. Jim. How are you this evening?
I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for taking the time on your Sunday and making the drive to be here. And everything that we have is looking good for question. I don't think we're going to get to all the questions I have for you, but we'll give it a shot. How's that?
Sounds great. We're excited to be here.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Well, this is kind of one of those I had to let everybody know because I was up moose hunting last fall. That's when we met Hadley, and you had an assistant with you.
Caroline. Might have
remember. Yeah, and we were up there moose hunting in the North Maine woods and had a brief conversation and ended up giving you one of my cards and say, you know, if you ever have an opportunity to come on and tell us about what you're doing up in the North Maine woods, it would be great. And here we are, and I'm looking forward to tonight's show so that we can find out a little bit about what you do up in the North Maine woods and all over Maine.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been looking forward to this since we met you, so we're glad this is finally happening.
Oh, good. We have almost all the snow. Snow must be pretty well gone in southern Maine at this point.
Most of it.
I drive around the greater Bangor area and it's pretty much gone until I go home in our dooryard and there's snow all the way past my boots. So
I was in Morrow Plantation this afternoon and they don't lack for snow.
No.
There's all kinds of snow up there.
Yeah. Well, looking forward to getting started with that. We are going to do the Outdoor Digest. Before we do the Outdoor Digest, I have an announcement to make. This is something that we've been talking about regarding the Northwoods Sporting Journal, and the Northwoods Northwood Sporting Journal is looking to hire a part-time advertising salesperson in the Farmington-Rangeley area. Position pays generous commissions, and the Northwood Sporting Journal will train you. Prior sales experience is helpful but not mandatory. And anyone interested should contact Vic Morin at 732-4880, 732-4880, or 735-8741. And having done the job now for 6 years doing advertising sales, I can tell you it's pretty much a one-man show right now in the state of Maine. That's me. We've had a couple people that have moved on to their own careers and back in mills that have opened back up and getting their old positions back. So we're looking to have a little bit of help in the advertising sales positions. So if you know of anybody or you yourself would like to do that, give Vic a call and we can make it happen. All right, tonight's Outdoor Digest is brought to you this week and every week by the Northwood Sporting Journal.
Hunting, fishing, loving every day. That's the prayer that a country boy prays. Thank God he made me this way. Hunting, fishing, loving every day. Early in the morning.
Well, we're going to have an abbreviated Maine Outdoors, the Outdoor Digest. Only because pretty much all the hunting seasons are about over and done, you know, for anybody that likes to do any rabbit hunting or anything. Of course, coyote season open all year long, but the open water fishing season opened last Monday, which was April 1st. Mm. I think the shoreline is a little bit easier to find now than it was last Monday, not so up north, but throughout central Maine and I guess that 95 corridor, the snow is pretty well gone along the edge of the streams for the most part. And the extended ice fishing season, and that's still in effect, has been extended for 21 days, mostly up in the northern regions. But again, Jim was saying that the ice is turning pretty black over in Fields Pond, right, Jim?
It is, and we have a large open area on both sides of the pond and the inlet and the outlet.
Yeah.
And the geese and the ducks are coming in.
Yeah. So, and if you go on the Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife, they will let you know the areas and lakes that have the extended. But even so, with all the warm days that we've had here recently, just because it's been extended doesn't mean that the ice is safe in all areas. So make sure you use common sense and make sure the ice is safe before you step on.
Yeah, this snow coming in tomorrow is going to help the ice go out.
Yeah. It's going to help it.
It's pretty porous this time of year, and when the snow melts, it melts the ice.
Yeah.
So you can't trust any of it, and it's all black right now.
Yeah. And I just wanted to add, too, that we got a nice letter from Dave Mercier, who does the Big Pine Gun Club up there in Guilford. Yep. And, you know, he was very cordial about inviting us to go up and check it. And I guess I will extend that all the way over to the listeners that if you're in that area, and geez, even if you're not, go up and see him up there at the Big Pine Gun Club in Guilford and check out their facility. Maybe they have something that you can bring home to your hunting club and pass along the good news. So
yeah, they do shooting there all year. Trap, they do fast draw or quick draw, whatever they call it. They promote gun safety big time up there.
Yeah.
Great people.
All right. Well, let's do a trivia question. And tonight's trivia question, I am going to have Josh read for us. And the trivia question is what, Josh?
Well, it is, what year was the Nature Conservancy founded?
What year was the Nature Conservancy founded? So if you think you know the answer to that question, give us a call. 1-800-966-1039. And we'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to the Maine Outdoors. Jim Thorne from Northwood Sporting Journal with you tonight. I didn't address it, but I know next weekend Bob Lehman's going to be on the show with Greg Burr, interviewing Greg Burr.
That's correct.
Greg's going to go from the interviewee or the interviewer to the interviewee. And they're going to, I bet they're going to be talking about fishing.
Fish, big time fish.
You think
so? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And where the stocking has been.
So everybody needs to have a pen and a pen and paper and write down notes.
Right. And, and if they're here, that means Paul's not here.
Paul's not in town yet.
So he's I think he's extended his, I think he's heard about our snow tomorrow.
That's right.
Yeah.
So he's holding off down in the Everglades somewhere. Hold up.
Held up. Yeah.
Well, before we went on break, we asked a trivia question, and the trivia question was, what year was the Nature Conservancy founded? And do we have anybody
who
would like
to
give
callers,
a guess?
Yes, right ahead, caller.
Hi, caller. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Jay from Corinna.
Hi, Jay from Corinna. How's everything in your world?
Oh, it's going pretty good. How about yourself?
Well, doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Think you know an answer to the question?
1951.
Hadley, what do you think? Is that close?
That's correct.
All right, 1951. Congratulations, Jay.
Awesome.
And we didn't mention it, but I will mail you a copy of the Maine Antler and Skull Trophy Club booklet, the
Thanks
annual
one.
Big Game Records publication. So you'll have your very own. We were just looking at that while we were on break, and very informative. They have everything in there from moose and turkey and deer, and they even include sheds. People that have found sheds, they score the sheds and score those. So very interesting reading.
Yep.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, and you hold on, and Norm will get your information from you, Jay, and congratulations, and thanks for listening.
Thanks, sir.
All right. Well, there was another answer that we were going to accept on that.
That's right.
And that was?
That answer would be 1956, but it's a subcategory of the Nature Conservancy. It's the main chapter.
The main chapter.
So the main chapter was founded in 1956, and Rachel Carson was one of the founding members of that.
And I think we've all heard of Rachel Carson, if you live in Maine for any length of time.
That's right.
Rachel Carson Preserve down in...
down on the coast, mid-coast.
Kennebunk? Is it
nope,
Kennebunk?
It's up the coast from there.
Okay.
All right, now I'm embarrassed.
Well, we do know that Rachel Carson
near
was
Pemaquid, I know that.
Very, very active. So, and tonight what we're going to do, we're going to try to find some common ground, and we're going to talk about what a little bit about what you do with the Nature Conservancy and a little bit about what lies ahead for you, a little bit about that. Hadley, we give a little bit of a background. We were moose hunting in September, late September,
yep,
up in the North Maine woods, and you were up there. Tell us a little bit about what you were doing up there at that time.
Great question. I was with a seasonal crew that I helped lead during the summer to assess road stream crossings. And so we were in the process of measuring and assessing culverts in the North Maine woods when we met you.
Culverts. And that was when I heard about that, you're looking at all the culverts west of Route 11, is that right?
Yeah, last summer we were focused on the west side of Aroostook County. And so we went from... pretty much the border all the way to Allegash, a little bit east of Allegash was our region for last summer.
All right. So, and on your radar for that, you had how many culverts? How many road crossings?
Last summer we did a little over 800.
800. And this is where active streams, rivers, brooks.
Yep. So it's any place, and culverts are really any time a brook or a stream or river needs to pass a road, or anytime a road crosses one of them. Mm-hmm. And so you put in place, whether it's a large pipe or a large tube of plastic, metal, or concrete to allow the river to flow underneath the road. So we actually drive over them every day. Anytime you're on a road, most of the times we might not even notice, but they're everywhere.
Okay. And what were you looking for studying in those culverts?
So in the culverts, part of our work is to help keep the rivers in Maine healthy the way that they are. And we're really lucky in Maine that we have the forest that we do that keeps rivers protected and the waters clean. And so we're looking to keep those rivers healthy. And one of the features of a healthy river is one that's connected to itself so that fish can move up and downstream freely throughout their life cycle to get to feeding grounds or spawning and mating sites and to seek refuge from temperature change or from predators. And so what we're doing is looking at culverts, measuring them, looking at their condition to see how they're impacting natural stream flow and the impact that they're having on fish and fish's ability to move. So we're really assessing culverts for fish passage and then also for community safety.
Right. So the temperature and the water quality and clarity and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And do you measure any place like upstream, downstream from the crossing to compare?
Yep. We look at, once we've taken measurements, I mean, simple measurements of the culvert itself, its dimensions, we then look at the reach of stream that runs through the culvert and is right around the culvert. And we compare it, we go up or downstream to compare it to a natural reach of stream to see how that culvert is impacting the natural stream flow. So yeah, we have to look at what natural stream flow would look like mm-hmm. for that stream and then compare what the culvert's doing to it.
Okay. And do you do different times of year, same culvert analysis, or it's just that time of year that is taken into account?
Most of our surveys or all of our surveys have been done during the summer. So we need it to be mostly during lower flows because a lot of these streams and rivers wouldn't be safe to have, you know, people in waders wading around in them. So they've all been in the summer.
Okay.
During low flow.
And you said this year you're going to be on the east side.
Yep. So this summer we have a slightly different crew going back up, although two of us are the same. And we're going to be in a region south of Fort Kent, north of Holton, and east of Route 11 predominantly, looking to finish up Aroostook County.
Okay. And I may or may not have about how culverts pose a barrier to fish. What harm or what good? Could mm-hmm. be a good thing in some cases. I've always had good luck fishing around culverts.
Right.
I was going to say Jim Thorne at culvert dunker. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Well, sometimes when you're riding up in the woods, you just kind of want to get that litmus test of how the fish are doing. So you might stop to stretch your legs and, well, you got a fishing pole in your car. So you might just kind of throw out a fly or dunk a worm or whatever mm-hmm. it is. So how is it that it either hurts or helps fish when it pertains to a culvert?
Mm-hmm. So there are a number of features that can pose a problem for fish with culverts, and most of them in general just have to do with the fish's ability to get up and downstream to different parts of its habitat. And so if a culvert, most culverts are too small is the first feature. They pinch the stream and force the stream to go through a much smaller diameter than the natural stream width would be. And this then necessarily forces the water to move faster and with more power. And a lot of times this just outpaces the fish's ability to swim. So if a culvert is anywhere from 30 to 60 feet long and moving faster than the fish's burst speed, the fish just doesn't have the energy to get through it. They also often, when that water is moving faster and more powerfully, it cleans out all the natural stream bottom from the culvert. So the fish doesn't have anywhere to go to kind of take a rest. Whereas when a fish is migrating upstream, if it's encountering faster water flows, it can duck behind a rock and rest. And they don't have that ability in a culvert, which doesn't have rock or sand or gravel.
Right.
And then a lot of them also develop a free fall on the outlet side. So instead of a fish being able to swim straight through it, the fish would have to jump into the culvert. And for a lot of fish, they either can't make the jump, or if they're really good jumpers and can get into it, mm-hmm. they then have to jump and immediately start swimming through. And so it just presents challenges to the fish's swimming ability if they can get through. And the problem this poses, even if sometimes it means that it kind of congregates fish at that, you know, at the inlet or the outlet, which right. could be helpful for fishermen. Ultimately, if fish are cut off from their habitat, they're not able to be as healthy and they're not able to grow as large. Mm-hmm. And we know that larger fish produce more offspring. And so it's really critical for fish, but then also for the culture of fishing, that these fish have the ability to move through these waters and get to all the areas they need so that they can grow and be healthy.
Right.
And to do that, we need to make sure we connect their waterways.
And there's other animals, too, that would be affected, obviously. I mean, mm-hmm. turtles go up, you know, upstreams and so forth, and, you know, the bugs and crayfish and, you know, depending on what the ecology is there for wildlife and animals and bugs and other fish and so forth. So
a lot of other things move with water too, and that's something else we see is a lot of culverts just get clogged. They're just too small and debris blocks them up, and then debris and insects or even fish pheromones can't move up and downstream, so it actually affects habitat for any other aquatic animal as well. Yeah.
I can speak for experience. The North Main woods, they go biggie. I mean, some of these you can stand up in. I mean, they account for mm-hmm. spring runoff, and I think very, very few times would somebody come up to one of the landowners and say, excuse me, you need to put a bigger culvert in, because
right.
the ones that I see are sometimes multiple
mm-hmm.
and, you know, large culverts. So hopefully yeah. that doesn't, you know, that's better, right?
Yeah, the ones we saw, we actually saw a lot of retired old tanks being used. We also saw the level of ingenuity we saw in the North Main Woods was impressive. We saw overturned dump trucks being used as culverts with the mud flaps still on.
Well, there.
That was great. And so, yeah, a lot of the ones that we saw, the problem wasn't necessarily the width of the culvert, but another issue is that culverts should either – the best culverts are either open bottom, so they actually – don't have a bottom entirely, or they're sunk deeper in so that they can have natural gravel and sand that's running through them. But it is true that a lot of the culverts in the North Main Woods are a lot larger and can handle greater flows.
Okay. Well, we'll be back. We got to sell some ad space here and listen about what it's all about, but we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Maine Outdoors. I'm your host for the evening, Jim Thorne with the Northwoods Sporting Journal. And tonight we are pleased to have with us from the Nature Conservancy, Hadley Corot and Josh Reut. And before we went on break, Hadley was talking to us a little bit about what she does and how that affects the water and the fish and the wildlife associated with that. And also tonight we have Josh Reut with us. Josh, maybe you could kind of touch on what the Nature Conservancy is and then a little bit about what you do with
sure.
the Nature Conservancy.
Yeah, happily. Thanks, Jim. So the Nature Conservancy is an international global nonprofit. We're non-governmental, non-confrontational, and our mission is to conserve the land and waters that all life depends on. And we're guided by science, and we try to tackle the toughest challenges so that nature and people can thrive together. We work in over 70 countries around the world, and as we learned from our trivia question, the Maine chapter was founded in 1956, and we've been protecting a lot of land in Maine, and more recently, starting around 2000, started looking more closely at rivers and streams and lakes and the marine environment. Mm-hmm. We also try to tackle climate change problems by looking at ways to reduce carbon emissions for towns. And
I know that Al Copperthwaite from the North Main Woods was on last month. I had him on as my guest. And up in the North Main Woods specifically, there's, I believe, 24 individual company landowners that comprise the 3.5 million acres of the North Main Woods, of which the Nature Conservancy is one of those landowners. So.
We're the 12th largest landowner in the state of Maine, the 12th largest private landowner in the state of Maine. And globally, we've protected tens of millions of acres hundreds of miles of rivers and streams and marine protected areas. So,
and how long have you been with
I've been with the Maine chapter for just over 20 years.
Okay.
So I'm their senior conservation scientist. So my job is to figure out the science that helps guide our decisions of what to protect and where to restore. So all the data that Hadley and her crews have been collecting and crews before them have been collecting for over a decade, all those data go into basically our decision-making tools to help us figure out where to spend really limited dollars on the places that make the most benefit for fish and wildlife and habitat and hopefully in places that really help people as well.
Okay. And I know that when we were talking earlier off radio, when you get to that point where you have all these different tracks, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the 12th largest landowner, they have to own some here and some there and some here and some there and some is probably coastal, like you said.
Exactly,
about the Rachel Carson.
Coastal islands, yeah.
We're going up north to the North Main Woods. So there's a lot of different habitat, and you're looking at lakes, you're looking at streams, brooks, feeder brooks, all that.
You got it, yeah.
And I know I talk to a lot of fellow outdoorsmen, hunters, fishermen, and as we drive up through, you know, we look at a stream and say, geez, I thought they were supposed to stay 50 feet or whatever it is, 50 yards away from a stream because when you lose the canopy, the sun gets to the stream, it warms up the water, it changes, you know, the ecosystem for the fish and the insects that are living in it, and it just basically will change a downstream from that as a result of that. Is that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the rules in Maine are in that unorganized township and really for all of Maine is that you need to maintain shade for those streams. Mm-hmm. So the landowners, you know, their work is to really protect that buffer around the streams to ensure the minimum standards to maintain shade. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it's better for streams when there are bigger trees around it. I think every fisherman knows when there's big logs in the water, that's a great place to cast a fly because fish need cover. The other thing that wood does in streams is help move the channel around, which is good for resorting gravels and getting those nice beds, whether it's for salmon fishing along the coast or landlocked salmon, inland brook trout. They need those gravelly shoal areas. So,
right. And minimizing the runoff, the soil runoff.
That's right.
I mean, and that's where everybody wants a working forest. Everybody knows that, you know, the logging industry and that's a sustainable
resource. Yeah.
Resource in Maine. And it employs a lot of people. We want to make sure that we utilize that to the fullest. But at the same time, we want to make sure that we're doing it in a way that isn't harming the fishing. And I know that we've heard that up through, the name is escaping me right now, up above Ashland, where they're going to be possibly mining on one of the mountains up there. Mm-hmm. And Bald Mountain. And you've heard from both sides, the speculators and the naysayers and the people that say, no, it's not going to ruin anything. And, you know, the ones that say, well, yeah, they've done it before in other places, and it does harm, you know, the fishery, so...
Yeah, it's tough to really impact the land with large scale mining the way we are used to seeing it done without having some kind of an impact on either groundwater or streams. So I think anyone developing a mine in Maine these days has to follow a pretty strict protocol to make sure that they don't have that kind of impact. Mm-hmm. And I think that's exactly the process we should have. It's great that we have our agencies looking after those things in the state of Maine. We try to keep an eye on it as well. But the key for some of these areas is that streams are always going to be changing. Sometimes they warm up. Sometimes bad things happen to one stream or another. You get a bunch of blowdown or something, and that's all the more reason why it's important to have lots of different connected tributaries. So if one tributary is sort of messed up for a little bit or mm-hmm. overheats, the fish can move from one to another small tributary coming to the bigger streams. Or when it dries up in the summer, they need to go lower down where there's more water.
Right.
Find the cool water.
We've seen that too from beaver damming.
Yeah.
How that can completely alter a river's passage.
It really does.
And I saw that firsthand with the west branch of the Mattawamkeag River up above Island Falls where mm-hmm. you know, the beaver comes in and then, you know, you do get a blow down and that blocks it. Then you get debris that comes down and the river has to back up and find a new path mm-hmm. essentially from its path that it's always taken originally. So
Yeah, it's amazing. And you know, it's what's even more amazing to me is these fish will work at it and work at it, and they'll find some way through, sometimes through the beaver dam, through little openings. And what's neat about beaver dams, we used to think that they were terrible for brook trout. You wouldn't find brook trout upstream of them. But it turns out that a lot of times those beaver dams force a lot of water into the groundwater, into the aquifer. Mm. And then it comes out again as well. So there's this cold water recharge and discharge around those areas. So ultimately, it's not terrible for a stream. It's not always great for the fishing.
Yeah. Well, I understand we have a caller on the line.
Yeah, you do.
Caller, are you there?
Yes, how are you doing tonight?
Good. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is Kevin, and I'm calling on the road. Pulled over.
All right.
And, I really like the conservatory's work. I've been on some of their land before, and they do a nice job. I really did appreciate the way your guest answered the mining question, because black and white society tends to fall left and right on something without the facts, and that was a great, honest answer about the rules and regulations. Mining, safe mining, is great.
Yeah,
I think people get a little hyper. My question for you, real quick, not so much in the unorganized townships, but in organized townships, when the conservatory or any nature group that we support comes in and preserves the lands, preserves the waters, what does the conservatory or a similar nature group, I guess for you, the conservatory, do to help offset some of the tax revenue that those municipalities need to provide roads and schools and stuff? And I know when you have a large tract that's in a organized town, then that town loses some tax revenue for their municipalities and their services, and then the other residents end up paying a higher tax. Does the conservatory do anything to, you know, fundraise and offset that? And I'll let you address that and go back to listening to your show. So thanks for your time.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks for listening. Great question.
Yeah,
yeah, Kevin, thank you. And so we're the Nature Conservancy, just to be clear. My dad always says it wrong, too, but I think he's got the hang of it after 20 years. So the Nature Conservancy, we own 275,000 acres around the state of Maine, and we pay a fee in lieu of taxes. So we work it out with the towns. We make sure they get something. We know the towns need to operate. It's in our best benefit to have good relationships with the town, because they're there and they're the locals, and we want them to love and appreciate and get out on these lands and hunt and fish and enjoy them. So
are you categorized as a nonprofit? Or
we are a nonprofit.
Okay.
Yep. So as part of raising the money to steward the land, because every land, even though people think it's just set aside, it's still, you still need to take care of it. It still takes money to do that. So we'll, when we fundraise to purchase a property, we'll also run fundraise to have a stewardship endowment. And part of that is making sure we can pay these fees in lieu of taxes for a lot of these towns. So it's standard practice among different land trusts around the state. So I think you'll see it's common to get something from the town, so that they don't lose that really important tax base. The other neat benefit about open space in your town is that it actually adds to the property values around that property, because people really want to live next to it. So often those property values go up, and the town makes up those values in the interest in being near them. So it creates a benefit for the town in a lot of ways, as well as, of course, health and recreation. So
sure,
there's a lot that towns get out of these open spaces, and we're glad that we can return some funds to the town as well.
All right. Thank you, Josh. It is time that we say hello and thank you to one of our sponsors of the show, General Appliance and Brewer, over at 91 Center Street. Al Elkin, the proprietor of that, has helped, now I can safely say, generations of Maine and non-Maine citizens with their gas and appliance services. And I've said this many times before, our camp has no electricity. So we have, of course, a generator we fire up. We teasingly call start the toaster. But we have a gas gas heater, a gas fireplace, a gas stove, a gas refrigerator, and gas hot water heater, and so forth. So we are in the light business, too, with the gas propane lights. And over at General Appliance, they can service or sell you any new or used product, to include the composting toilets.
Right away, baby.
He's always there when you need him. to include the propane, and I guess now he has electric appliances as well.
Yes, he does.
So he's just a very, very accommodating gentleman, Al Elkin is. He will take care of you. If you have a problem, just go over and talk to him. If he can't fix it, first of all, I'll be surprised, but he'll tell you where to go get that problem fixed. And, you know, I did that with a friend of mine that had a place up near Ashland. And, of course, he didn't try to grab it. He said, there's a guy up there. This is the guy you need to contact and call him, and he'll take care of you. So he works like that. That's how it is. Great service, great products. He has a unique line of off-grid appliances over there. That's Al Elkin. He's been supporting the Maine Outdoors Radio Show for longer than I can remember. And he's located on 91 Center Street. The phone number there is 989-4341. So go over and see Al at General Appliance, and he'll hook you up and take care of you.
Very affordable.
That's right. Well, if you're listening to us tonight, you're listening to us on WVOM 103.9 FM out of Bangor, 101.3 FM out of Augusta, or 95.1 FM in Rockland. And the phone number here, if you have a question, comment, 1-800-966-1039. And I understand we have a caller on the line, Norm?
Yes, we do.
All right. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
All right. Hi. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi. I'm Dan LaPointe from Orono. Nature's Conservancy is a UN-approved non-governmental organization. And I have trouble with that. It sounds really good, everything that's being said, but I have on the comprehensive plan seen a list of things in the zone that were going to be taken away. Mm-hmm. And Sierra Club and Nature's Conservancy brought that forward. And through the comprehensive plan, it got implemented. Mm-hmm. There was a thing in 2013, Stop the Quarry in Orono. Nature's Conservancy wanted 35 cents a yard. Orono wanted 25 cents a yard. They would stand aside and let us put our quarry in. We're grandfathered, one of 92 in the state. Mm-hmm. And the sad part about this is the self-serving nature. And our taxes in Orono, because of the land trust, now 50% of the land is set aside. We're 27% mill rate, and it's due to go up another $1,000. If people pay $4,000, it's due to go up another $1,000.
Yeah,
it's really tough on us.
Yes, and there's a lot of businesses that have gone out and taken the tax burden. Yeah.
Yeah, the tax burden is terrible.
Yeah.
While Nature's Conservancy has spoken very well,
mm-hmm.
you know, the land is no longer ours that it has taken. This is a very serious issue, and it has harmed us in Orono tremendously and personally.
Okay.
And while they speak very well,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'll tell you, Tom DeWeese speaks about the various land trusts
mm-hmm.
and what it has done to America.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather there are good people that serve.
Yeah.
But I wish that they had a better understanding of this taking, you know.
Okay.
And it takes forever.
I know.
It's like scorched earth. There's nothing left for us to develop.
Well, and thank you, Dan. I appreciate you calling in and letting us know that. And, you know, I just not trying to push my religious beliefs on anyone, but in church today, the theme was, let thee that is among us, that is free from sin, cast the first stone. And I know that we all try to get along as best we can. Everybody has a different agenda and a different ultimate goal. And tonight what we're trying to do is we're trying to find common ground. where we have people that love the outdoors. We love to hunt. We love to fish. The Nature Conservancy has a conservancy plan. Obviously, they're a nonprofit. They're national, nationwide, and no, not everybody agrees with everything that everybody does, whether it be in the hunting world or in the conservancy world. But tonight, what we're trying to do is we're trying to find a common thread where those of us that like to hunt, fish, and use the outdoors, and the Nature Conservancy that is doing these tests on a scientific level, looking at the data, collecting data, and doing the analysis on it, and saying, you know, this is harmful for fish, this is good for fish, this is good for the ecosystem, this is bad for the ecosystem, and you know, the mining, that was a separate page. I didn't mean to confuse the two, but in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, if half the people that are saying this are going off other mining operations and so forth, that has nothing to do with the Nature Conservancy. It was just strictly from a, gee, I wonder, talking with these folks here about who is comprising the data for them to see if the mining operation that someone may do, in this case I think it's Irving, what that impact has on it. And is that private, or is that something that maybe you would be called in to do that research on that if requested to do so by Irving or by the state of Maine?
Oh, interesting. I mean, it is getting a little bit away from our research. We're not a consulting organization, so they would probably have to fight.
You pretty much stay on land that you own. As far as that goes, and analyzing that information, correct?
So we
nobody calls you in and says, "Hey, you guys are real good at collecting data, and you know what you're doing. Could you come see how the impact?"
Tend not
is?
To be hired to do research. That's true.
I know you do a lot of culvert analysis, but that's not always on Nature Conservancy land, correct?
Right. This is data for the state of Maine, for whether they're for towns, municipalities, so they have the data. For our private landowners, they have their own data so they can make better decisions about where to work. And all the public data, whether it's DOT or town roads, are provided on a statewide habitat viewer. So anyone can look at those data. They look at the data, the pictures when they're available for the road stream crossings, and they can look at how much habitat is up or downstream and make their own decision. Mm-hmm. And then if you're in the Penobscot River drainage, so if you look at the state of Maine, it's really about a quarter of the state of Maine from Quebec to New Brunswick and from just north of Millinocket all the way down to Bucksport. So if you look at that watershed, there's actually a tool that helps people decide, but gives them the information to make better decisions about where to work. So it's a decision support tool. Anyone can look at it. So if you're a town or a small landowner, if you're interested in improving your stream habitat or your town is interested in where to put their limited dollars, this can help guide them. It can also guide them towards a project that may be eligible for funding. So we have a state water bond that was passed. It's now a transportation bond that leaves about $10 million waiting right now to go out to towns to help them improve these road
in
stream
research.
Crossings. No, this is for actually doing the projects.
Studies.
So there's money to help them get a better crossing in, to put in an arch bottomless culvert that Hadley was talking about, so there can be a healthier stream. There's another source of money for private landowners from the Natural Resources Conservation Service. So that's part of USDA. Mm-hmm. And that money the Nature Conservancy applied for to help large landowners and small landowners, anyone producing fuel or fiber or food from their land, can apply for this money to help them with the cost of upgrading culverts to something that's going to be friendlier to the stream and actually safer, which is another point that I think Hadley probably would like to bring up. Just these larger culverts are also safer for communities.
And what do you do with, like, if you have a problem culvert or something like that?
So once we've identified the problem culverts, which anyone can do with either the mainstream habitat viewer or the Penobscot barrier prioritization tool that Josh just mentioned, once you've identified the problem, you can then apply, depending on what type of landowner you are, you can apply for funding help. And then you can work with either the Nature Conservancy or other partners to help with technical support or project management to put in these fish-friendly culverts that are wide enough, not just for fish, but also wide enough to accommodate for flood surges, which ends up making the roads safer for communities. They're a lot less likely to flood.
And, minute and a half.
And then... So they can handle larger amounts of water in storms that will then protect community roads. And in many rural places in Maine where there might be a single road that connects dozens of families from any emergency services. So these culverts are both better for fish, mm-hmm. Better for fishing then, and then also safer for communities and more economical in the long run.
Okay. So where can someone go to learn more about this or what they can do?
So just for more information, at nature.org/thecomeback, there's a little bit more information about some of the astounding returns of sea-run fish that we've seen from some of the projects that the Nature Conservancy and our countless partners have been involved in. Mm-hmm. And also, if someone is interested in learning more about the transportation bond money, they can contact Benjamin Matthews at the Nature Conservancy at benjamin.matthews@tnc.org.
Okay.
And if they're interested in, if it's a private landowner interested in money that Josh mentioned,
The NRCS money, which is part of a regional conservation partnership program, they can contact Eileen Bader Hall. So that's eileen.baderhall, as one word, at tnc.org.
All right. Well, thank you. I knew we weren't going to be able to get to everything, but I think
not.
We gave it a pretty good shot.
Thank you, Jim.
I want to appreciate you guys taking the time out of your Sunday to take the drive up and talk to all the listeners today about what you do. I think it's fascinating. I think it's a great cooperation between the outdoors and what you do and collect data on that and carry everybody forward. Next week, make sure you tune back right in here. Sunday night, 7 o'clock, same channel, same time, same place.
Pencil and pad.
That's right. Bob Lehman's going to be giving fishing secrets with Greg Burr right here on the Maine Outdoors.